listening to Cleveland and Beyond with Andy Billman and Jared Watson, brought to you by Evergreen Podcasts.
Hello and welcome. He's Andy Billman. I'm Jared Watson, and this podcast is brought to you by Waiting for Next Year. Check him out, original Cleveland sports reporting at waitingfornextyear.com. Also, coming soon to Evergreen Podcasts. Well, we're going to do a quick intro here for an interview that we did about a week ago with Mandy Bell. So this is an addendum to our Indians wrap-up with Indians beat reporter Mandy Bell from last week, because some things have changed in the meantime. There are rumors flying all over the place regarding Frankie Lindor and an imminent trade, which will take place prior to opening day. We knew it was coming. That's not the only thing we're going to talk about. Andy, let's just go ahead and start with the lead here. Frankie, as expected, is going to be traded.
I think we already kind of accepted it, but now from Bob Nightingale, who's a reputable reporter on baseball, the beginning of the end is near for us. And as Indians fans cheering for Lindor, to be honest with you, I've come to grips with this after the Yankees game. I just did not see the place. I've been defending Lindor staying. I want Lindor to stay. I want to repeat that. I want Lindor to stay.
Yeah.
I know, though, there's economic issues. I know that's not fair to rip that too, as people have been saying on Twitter, and it's fairly, you know, billionaires crying about millions, and you know that's all fair. I'm not going to get into that today, though.
Cleveland,
that's not
Browns.
My spot. But that's not an unfair comment. I totally get it. I think the Indians should try to keep Lindor. It's already been, I'm just starting to accept it. I don't think, Jared, it's just hard for me to get my head around it. And I think the biggest thing is that we had talked about, which we get into Mandy in the show, the transition is happening. There's going to be some very good talented pitching, Bieber being led by Bieber and Plesac and others. But Jared, for being honest, the transition is starting. And Lindor trading is probably going to be the big kickoff.
Right. Lindor trading, contracts not being picked up.
Yeah.
The Indians are freeing up a lot of money, So forgive me, Andy, if I'm messing this up. But was there more in that week since talking to Mandy that had popped up, or was it just that Frankie stuff? OK, some reason I had on my mind the Brad Hand contract.
All that stuff did happen, too.
Didn't that happen prior to our conversation with Mandy? No. So we are talking about those things. OK. I thought so. Man, this past week has just been something.
With the election, everybody's taking a mental break.
I couldn't remember what happened when.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm one who works throughout the day on Friday. I'm even taking time off after this.
Well, and exactly.
We all need it.
And admittedly, we didn't really come up with notes to roll into this this little change up for the beginning of this episode.
You're gonna laugh. I sent you an email, but it's okay. I love you.
Well, I had to rush home because I was dealing with an HVAC guy at my house new house. And
you know what?
Life is crazy, man.
Life is crazy. So here's the everybody laugh after this. Okay. Roberto Perez is coming back. We talked about it. We all thought that. Mandy agreed. Roberto Perez is coming back. We said at the end of the show, we thought he should come back. He does. It's $5.5 million. Brad Hand's gone. It's going to cost the tribe $1 million. They're really lucky with these contracts. They have a lot of good buyouts this year. Really played well into a pandemic year for the economic strap team. Brad Hand's gone. Made a lot of sense. There's really nothing to elaborate. He's a good man. We talked about this on a couple other podcasts for Cleveland Beyond leading up to this one. Mandy Bell, good man. But to pay a high-priced talent closer, you got to be a talented, high-end closer. He's not anymore. He's middle of the road at best.
Right.
And with other things coming in, it didn't make sense. Brad Hand coming back really didn't make sense with Karinchak and Clase behind him. Carlos Santana had a $17.5 million option. He did not get that. He got a $500,000 buyout. Same thing here, really. We love Santana. His magical season of 19 was wonderful. He's a good man. He is going to be remembered as an Indian, actually. And it's funny, if you would have guessed that 5 years ago, I don't think many would have said that. I will remember him as an Indian.
Absolutely. Same. In the same way that Jim Thome wore a bunch of different uniforms and is still an Indian, right?
Yeah. Now, Santana loved playing here. His numbers last year, I won't go through them. They're bad. His stat line last year was really bad. And it showed. And this wasn't just bad stats. It showed. He didn't look good. He is about ready to turn 35. Jared just, again, made too much sense.
Well, we knew that after the season prior that he was going to have to come back to earth. We knew that might have been a little bit of an anomaly But at the same time, it came fast, kind of like it did with Kipnis.
Yeah, it did. Kipnis is a fair comparison. I'd even say last year was worse than any of the Kipnis years later towards his career. Santana really, outside of getting walks, it was hard. It was hard. He had some big home runs,
yeah,
and that's about it. I mean, honestly, that's about it. But he's on his way, and it made too much sense. And there's nothing else to say.
As a reminder, as we roll into the interview with Mandy, this Indians team is going to be reliant on their young talent. We're talking about Fronmill. We're talking about Naylor. We're talking about Karinchak moving into that closing position at some point. Mm-hmm. We're talking about that young rotation that is the best in baseball until someone proves otherwise. Now, of course, they struggled at the end of the year, the playoffs and the Yankees. We don't want to talk about that. We talk about it with the interview. Anyway, but we know that the young talent is there. We know young talent is coming up and will be filling spots in the outfield. We can call it a rebuild, but I don't – maybe I'm naive. I'm not turning the lights off on this team next year.
Well,
because that rotation is so good that if you can average, if you can squeak out 3 runs a game like they did this season – and maybe you catch fire with these young guys, especially if a healthy Tito comes back and can wrangle these cats and make them do something fun. You know, maybe that's fool's gold. At the same time, over the next couple of years, if we're talking about a longer term vision for the team, they do have pieces in place that they will be able to get by on and do pretty well with. The next thing is going to be, when does the money come back? When do the revenue streams come back? When does everything get back to normal, per se, regarding attendance, regarding every other way that the Indians need to make that money so that we can get those players in key spots at, you know, in the year if they are pushing and making a run? That stuff will continue, but the money's got to come back, Andy. And I mean, it just does. And I know that people bitch and complain about the Dolans, but the Dolans have spent money. They've done things to make the team better at times. It goes back and forth. It's not always perfect. And we know that the Dolan, that Mr. Dolan does not do all that well in front of a TV camera, reminding us all to enjoy Frankie when we can. Right. I mean, that still lingers in my mind right now, especially in this situation. But I really think that, and we're, by the way, we're saying Indians, they're not even going to be the Indians. So
there's a lot of transition. I mean, to what Jared said, I would not expect big free agent signings. And in fact, I think you need to see some of these young kids play would be my argument. Jared makes a very fair point. They are transitioning. It's not a complete rebuild, but they are transitioning. My expectations for this team will be a lot lower than it was this year. Meaning like I'm not expecting playoffs. Playoffs would be a really pleasant surprise. Maybe my mind and heart will change by the time it's April, but right now it's pretty much there.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's not an impossibility. That's all. I'm saying
not impossible. J-Ram won the Silver Slugger Award this week. So kudos to him. He was the best hitting third baseman in the AL. And then on Tuesday of this week, which is election night, which was weird, they announced that Roberto Perez won the Gold Glove for catcher, which he deserved. He was by far the best fielding catcher. And Cesar Hernandez won the Gold Glove too, his first one ever for second base for the Tribe. Probably won't be here, but he also won the Gold Glove. So those are the rest of the stuff. And to cap off what my partner just said, and then we'll get right into Mandy, I'll leave it like this. I think this is a transition time. It doesn't mean the Indians are depleted of talent. We know they have one of the best young starting pitching. I mean, not just young, but talented. McKenzie looks real. Savali's got some length under him now, meaning I think he's got some years where I think he'll be good. I think he's going to get better. That kind of stuff along with Plesac, you know what you're getting from Kuki. And, of course, Bieber. I mean, they have a solid starting five. So that is a foundation, and that's why it's not a complete rebuild. They have some foundation in starting pitching. Now it's filling in the rest.
Okay. Well, without further ado, here's our conversation with Indians beat reporter Mandy Bell. Hey, we're going to do a wrap up of the Indians 2020 season here. For those of you who listen to our podcast, this is the Browns bye week edition, recording it a little bit early. And we've got someone who we haven't seen in a very long time. Indians beat reporter Mandy Bell joins us to recap what was quite a full year of Cleveland Indians 2020 season. It was wow, just the fact that they pulled it off, Mandy, made me as happy as I could be right now, to be honest.
I know. I mean, there was so much uncertainty going into the year. So many of us didn't even expect to get to this point in the postseason, to see it get to the World Series. I'm just relieved that we've made it to this point and that we got here and that you could have somewhat of a season, like a full feel of a season. I know it was short. It went so fast. It was so, so quick. But it was exciting. And I think that it was as fun as it possibly could have been for how quick it went.
Let me ask the Captain Obvious question. What is your thoughts on the Lindor situation? He had some interesting comments after the year. I think the Indians, I mean, I was going to go down this road anyway, so I'll go down quickly. I think the Indians are in a weird transition period. They have great pitching. Plesak, obviously Bieber. McKenzie's exciting. Really, really, really exciting. Mm. But it feels like the Indians are kind of transitioning at the same time. What is your vibe? And kind of goes into Lindor, I think. What do you think? I know there's no magic answer, but what do you think the possibilities are for Lindor now?
It's tough. I mean, I think their goal the last few years, it's been pretty clear, is to cut payroll. But now I think with the effects of COVID, it's going to be slash payroll. I just think it's, they have to get down even lower. And it's tough because you're going to see that around the league this offseason. Everybody's going to have to. And for a team that was already trying to make that their goal, having financial loss is probably the worst thing that you could have happen. So I think it's going to be tough. So if you would even try to imagine them allowing Lindor to play out his time in Cleveland, or maybe they somehow would try to sell him at the deadline to a team that was just trying to make a push or something. It seems like those are both just off the table. I mean, he's going to be making $20 million around there next year. That's a lot of money for a team that's not trying to have a big payroll for 2021. So I think that all signs are sort of pointing towards him being moved this off season. I think they missed their window last year. I know they were pushing and pushing for the exact deal they wanted. And that's their thing. They never sell for a penny less than what they want. But I think if they could have been given a crystal ball to know what this year was going to hold, they would have definitely pulled the trigger last year. So it's going to be different. I think it's going to be tough. It's not going to be really a market where a lot of teams are trying to take on hefty deals. So it's going to be weird to see how this plays out for somebody like Lindor, especially when he had such an inconsistent year this year. But moving forward, it seems like they're going younger and younger. And I mean, with that, it comes cheaper as well.
Mandy, to continue on the payroll issue, when we're talking about the slashing of payroll and how small market and mid market teams are going to struggle, are we going to see any of those same struggles out of teams like the New York Yankees, like the Dodgers, is their money just going to continue to flow no matter what?
Well, I mean, they definitely have more than small market teams for sure. But you already hear the narrative of they're trying to cut back. Now, their cutting back isn't getting under $100 million. Their cutting back is, well, let's float around $200 million. So it's a little bit different, two different ballparks in that range.
Just a little bit.
But they aren't going to be just like last year, where the Yankees basically handed Gerrit Cole a check and said, fill it out. Like, I mean, it's not going to be something like that. I don't think you'll see big splashes like that. But I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I guess I wanted to bring that up because I didn't know whether it would give some hope to Indians fans that there's some sort of possibility that Lindor's not going to find a deal elsewhere. But Lord knows that's probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different because everybody's going to take a hit from this. But and it's going to be a few years. I think everybody's going to feel this for a few years. But no matter what, it's still going to be the same situation because the Indians are being hit the same. So no matter what his number is, even if it's a smaller number, the Indians now can't afford even that smaller number. They have to go smaller than that. So I think it's just changing that scale a little bit. So it's still going to be the bigger spending teams, I think, that are going to end up getting him long term, just because that's just who can afford him.
I think the Rays gives us hope, us being Indians fans. The Rays and how they're playing, I'm really hopeful. I won't lie. I probably have a Devil Rays t-shirt on somewhere. I'm hoping they win. I think that'd be great. Kevin Cash, too, is an ex-Indian guy. before we go down the fun road of the Yankee series, I do want to say I thought this year was a – I know, Jared, we have to, though. It was a lot of fun this year. I really enjoyed the last week, especially in the regular season. I really enjoyed the White Sox series. I love beating those guys. It's great. I don't like the White Sox. So it's always fun. And in particular, I think people forget Shane Bieber and Jose Ramirez had great, great seasons. And I think, Mandy, and I want you to answer this question, I think they're going to win both awards. I think J-Ram's going to win MVP. And I think Shane Bieber's a lock. Talk about those two and talk about, I just don't think it's, I think it's forgotten. Those two guys had wonderful, wonderful seasons.
They absolutely did. I don't think that there's any way anyone takes that from Shane Bieber. I think that is as much of a slam dunk as any year possible. The shortened season certainly helped that, but it also, in a way, it's like he only had a certain amount of time to stand out so much. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was able to make that separation in such a little amount of time, I think that in itself is impressive. It's tough because there's always going to be that little asterisk that everyone's like, oh, well, it was a shortened year. Right. He won the MLB pitching triple crown, but everyone's like, okay, well, do it for a full season. And so you hear those things, but I think one of my favorite things, I was asked for like my last inbox that I wrote, and someone said, it was Sarah Langs who said, what was your favorite Indian stat this year? And I think like, no matter what, my favorite one is going to be that he hit 100 strikeouts quicker than any pitcher ever, in the fewest amount of innings. And that stretches all seasons. It doesn't matter how many games they had this year. That just allows everybody to put it in perspective, no matter how many games they ended up playing, just the pace that he got off to. So no matter what, I think it's pretty clear how historic his start was. It's upsetting that we didn't get to see it at its full length, but it was fun for whatever it was. So I think he's a slam dunk. Jose Ramirez, I mean, his case is really more like, I think it's more impressive because he came on when his team needed him most.
I know.
And I think that was the biggest thing for him. He hit a little bit of a skid in August. I know he was dealing with those thumb issues. And that played a big role. And but he was still able to do decently well playing through all of that. But when he turned it on, it was when the Indians were just falling apart. They needed something. And he basically single-handedly pulled them out of a losing skid and forced their way into making sure they clinched a playoff spot. And not only did they clinch a playoff spot, they ended up pulling themselves out of their little wild card spot to get into home field advantage. So I think his case is impressive more so because he did it at the time that he was needed most. I think it's going to be more difficult for him.
Of course.
I think Jose Abreu definitely has a case. I think there's definitely going to be guys that are giving him more of competition than what Shane Bieber is going to be up against. But I think it's going to be fun for Indians fans to be able to have two guys coming up with the possibility of true possibility of winning.
I think that what helps, by the way, Sarah Lang and Mandy Bell tweet at each other and they're very fun and they give great stats and people I follow, not trying to creep, but I follow and I read the stats and they are wonderful, wonderful stats. She's Sarah Lang knows her stuff. And as you do too, knows her stuff. She gives great tweets.
She's the best.
She really is very, very clever too with her tweeting. The one thing I was going to mention though, with J-Ram, I thought the White Sox series and how they won in that week elevated him to MVP. Because I was head to head, and I know I forget the other guy's name right now. I know it's Abreu and the leadoff hitter. The guy loves to do bat flips until the White Sox get bat flips on them. Anderson, that was a whole fun thing this year too. So okay, let's go down the road now. Now the Yankee series was bad. Okay, all that to be said, it was bad. It was not good. No. But I will say I thought some things from that developed. Now to my going future question, Josh Naylor's exciting. I like where Reyes is going. I think Reyes has got a career here. I really do. I like him a lot. But I think we're seeing some transition from that series before we get on the field stuff. I thought we really saw, I hate to say it, I love Los. I think the Carlos Santana might be here. Perez, wonderful cat glove. I don't know how much longer I can go with that out of glove. Mandy, what did you see from that series outside of game two, which we'll get to, that maybe you see in the future for 2021 Indian stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's so tough to analyze so much in such a short series. And it was such a quick turnaround and the pitching was so different from what we saw the whole year. Even the bullpen, it was a lot, but I do agree. Josh Naylor is fun. That was fun. I know there was a lot of question marks whenever that trade happened. There was a lot of people who did not like that trade. I think there's still going to be a few years left for them to prove that they earned that trade and that they won that trade. I think a lot of it's going to come into how those minor league guys end up panning out. But I think the passion that Naylor has was evident, and it was so much fun when he got pinch hit for and he came out and you could see that he was just steaming. And then 2 seconds later, when Luplo had that game tying double, I mean, no one was more pumped than Naylor. Oh, and that was so cool. Great. It was so fun. But like you said, I think that the future is going to be Franmil Reyes in the middle of this lineup. He has a few more years until he hits free agency. He's young. He's exciting. He's lovable. I mean, the fan base, the more he's on TV, the better, because fans can just fall for this guy. And I think he's going to be the great smiling personality that can take over if and when Lindor does get moved. So I think that's going to be a nice face for the franchise moving forward.
Mandy, my opinion of that 3-game series with the Yankees is that it was a microcosm of all of the bad things that the Indians had to deal with throughout the season, whether it be their bats or whether it be certain struggles at times with inexperience on the mound. That seemed to just it just put a spotlight on all of the bad things about this team throughout the season, and it just amplified them in those 3 games. What do you think when I say that?
Yeah, it was weird, especially game 2, because it, in a way, it seemed opposite of what they dealt with all season, because it was terrible pitching and the bats kept them in it. And it just seemed like that was so opposite of everything that we've seen this year. And in so many games, they've been held to 5 or fewer hits and scored 2 or fewer runs. And it was like the same storyline every single night. It feels like forever ago now, but like that game 2 was just so exhilarating because somehow the offense just kept answering and you're like, this hasn't happened all year. And you just kept expecting the pitching to just be like, okay, then the pitching will just get it together and they'll close it out like they have. And they just couldn't. So it was so strange to have that opposite. But I do see like the same way where it was just like, there was just small little things that it's just like, they're close, but they're not there. And that's how you felt all season. Like they have a couple guys here and there. But you had Lindor, who wasn't Lindor this year. And that hurt. And you could feel that every single game. And then Franmil Reyes had a scorching hot August, but that was really it. And so it was just difficult to go back and forth. So you felt it in that series, but then you also saw the complete opposite of everything that you watched during the regular season.
Do you think that the shortened season elevated the team or kind of held them back? Do you think a longer season would have played more into their favor? Because I personally thought coming into the season that a short season would have played to their favor more than a full season, just by the way that they were built.
I think that answer is different for what aspect you're asking about. I think for pitching, I think it definitely was an advantage. And I think for hitting, it was definitely a disadvantage. Overall, I think the pitching would be able to sustain success better than the offense can. So I think overall, a longer season probably would have benefited them. But I mean, this team's notorious for their slow offensive starts. I mean, that's just how it is for Tito. And Tito's always ready to turn it on in the second half. And that's just what we've seen over the last few years. You saw it after June last year is whenever they really started kicking it up. So, I mean, you get sort of into that same rhythm year after year. And I think going into it, so many of us kept asking, are you guys concerned about that? Because I mean, we've asked Tito, we asked all of them, you guys know how you start every year. Is that a concern? And they're like, no, of course not. They're never going to say it is a concern, obviously. But I mean, I think that's something that you have to consider because it takes some of those guys some time. And then whenever it's not clicking right away, I'm sure you can have more pressure on yourself because you're thinking, oh no, this is only 60 games in a season. Right. I don't have 162 to figure it out. Right. So then you press more. If you have like a Lindor situation, he might have been putting more pressure on himself and that chance. And then he doesn't get into a rhythm like he would have in a longer season. Like you never know.
I felt Lindor putting pressure on himself. He had some moments. I mean, he had a big home run in a couple of places. Definitely. But like, I know what you mean. He wasn't Lindor free agent, Lindor, for being honest. In fact, you thought that anywhere was Hernandez. Hernandez clutch hits every time. I see hipster Tito's calling. Before I get to hipster, is there any chance they sign Hernandez? Any chance? I would love to see him back. Mandy, I really enjoyed him last year.
I know. And I know that they would love to because mm-hmm. they loved him. And
I love
he loved him. It here. Both sides were very, very clear and saying mm-hmm. that. They both expressed their feelings about it. And he said, I'd love to stay here. Now, he was $6 million last year. Could they afford $6 million again? Like, that's the ballpark that we're in right now. Can you afford a $6 million type of deal? Does he want more than that after this season? Right. Can he sign for something around there? So we asked that question earlier this year, or like right after the postseason ended, and Antonetti said, look, if the funds are there, that's something that we would love to do. But you could just tell at that point, he wasn't really sure what their blueprint was going to be because
yeah.
they just ended and they needed to go through and say, look, like what's going to be the financial outlook of this team?
Let me ask, because I thought his comments were interesting and I know you can't predict, but I thought Antonetti, in fairness, did a good job of explaining. We really don't know the financial future for next year. And I think that goes throughout baseball. But this is why this is, I just think, how to say it? I just think it's time to transition a little bit. I think it's time to see Bobby Bradley. I think it's time to see Daniel Johnson.
Yeah, and we both talked about that, where it felt like it was time. We were wondering why we weren't seeing some of these guys at certain mm-hmm. points. And maybe part of it is it was harder to make certain decisions. I mean, well, maybe. I don't know. And you can tell me if I'm wrong. Did Tito not being there for the end, back end of the season, did that have any effect on certain moves that they would have made in that realm?
I don't know. It's tough because yeah. It's hard to measure the impact of what Tito is from afar, especially when we were removed from the clubhouses this year. We couldn't right. see what that chemistry was like. So it was difficult to measure, mm-hmm. but the same answers that we kept hearing from the players over and over again was just like how much they were missing Tito. And like, you know, what kind of an impact he can have, you know, how much he can help in those types of situations, bringing more young guys up and integrating them. I don't know if he was a big role in that or not. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that Daniel Johnson didn't get more of a chance this
Me
past
too.
Year.
Yeah.
Me
too.
I mean, especially because their outfield was the offensive numbers were like historically bad for them.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like it can't get worse. So why not? But they just never mm-hmm. really did it. And I was really, really shocked by that. So I would expect him to get more of a shot next year. They seemed very optimistic about the work that Jake Bowers has put in. And mm-hmm. I was surprised he didn't even get a chance at all this year. Mm-hmm. I know last year wasn't great for him, but like, again, like I said, just changing it up at all couldn't have hurt. So I think they have plenty of maybe around average options. Mm-hmm. I think Daniel Johnson can still turn into something pretty solid in the outfield. They were optimistic about Oscar Mercado's plan and for the offseason to improve because he knew it. He knew he had a really, really tough year and it weighed on him and he's ready to enter the offseason and fix all of those minor things that he started just piling up and couldn't fix quickly enough in such a shortened season.
Mm-hmm.
So I know they're optimistic, but there's obviously a lot of concern still for that outfield.
I was going to go there real quickly, then Jared, I'll let you go next. I love the Shields, but him sliding around in game two and him misplaying balls was tough to watch. I've been a big supporter of Naquin. I don't know, Mandy. I agree with you. It's like, I guess I'm going to go threefold. I'm glad I was going to ask about Mercado. Any chance for Zimmer at all? Are they going to give him, in your opinion? I know, I saw that face. I don't know. And here's my other thing. I just think now it's like, I like the Shields, but I think he's more off the bench guy. What do they do with this outfield? I was going to ask you, but you kind of already went into it.
Well, because we thought that their outfield would have been improved from the prior year. We thought that they were on the right track with things, and it just did
Never
not
banned.
Work out. It was my it made me want to pull my hair so many times.
It just seems like they have too many options.
Yes. Oh,
right. And who works together and who flows together and who can get their bats going.
The mystery of Blue Blow and Naquin. Anyways, Mandy.
I can't remember how many games in Sarah Langs is my encyclopedia every single year. If I have any question ever about anything that I want to make sure I get right looking up, I send it her way. And I said, okay, I want to make sure this is correct. How many different combinations of outfielders have they had so far this year? And I think this was like game 46, maybe. Mm-hmm. And they'd already had 25.
Oh,
and I was like, okay, that's an insane number. To think of throughout that shortened time period. So, I mean, they had too many options. Mm-hmm. They didn't have many outstanding options, but whenever you have too many average options, you don't give any of these guys a chance to settle in.
Yes.
And so they have a day or two in there and then they're out, or they're in a different, they're in left field instead of center. And then they're just moving around. So
like not everyone can be a platoon. Whole outfield doesn't need to be a platoon all season. It don't need to be that way. I don't know anyone who makes it work that way.
Correct. So and then it just seems like there was,
you get time and you get time. Everybody gets time.
Yeah. Can I get time?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, what it was. I know. And I think that's exactly what it was. They were trying so hard. One night didn't work. So like, all right, let's try something else. And they just didn't give anyone really enough of a chance. And it seemed like DeShields became the person who got the most chances. And he was the most consistent in that lineup. And it got tough toward the end because his defense, I mean, that's what he was supposed to be known for coming into the year. And his defense was shaky all year long, and it hurt during the postseason, as short as it was, but it did end up hurting. And that was difficult to have to watch that play out the way it was, because I mean, you know how many outfield options they have, but yeah, it was tough.
Plethora.
Yes.
So Hipster Tito parody accounts on Twitter is commenting now, hated how it got to a point that Sandy named his outfield combos. Was Sandy Alomar catching too much flack, do you think, this season from folks? I thought he stepped in and did a really great job with the team, considering the situation. I think Andy felt the same way. How did Sandy feel settling in and taking over for Tito when he had to?
Well, I mean, it was great at the beginning because everything was going well when he first took over. And then they hit that losing streak, and then you could tell that he struggled. People were tough. And he's new to this, and he's not used to taking all of the heat. And he made comments in his pressers where he was like, look, if you have a suggestion, give me a suggestion. Or like, I'm not going to be perfect. Like, I'm
this
trying.
This is a guy who is used to being loved in that city, no matter what.
And is still loved.
Absolutely. But I mean, tough facing love. This type of adversity isn't something that he's had to deal with.
No bench coach, no hitting coach. Sandy, I'll just say it. Sandy had no shot. I just felt like the whole year, it's like, Lindor's not going to play up to his ability. You have an outfield that's kind of a mess. It's a pandemic, by the way. Oh, and now to my next question, Clevinger. So let's, Mandy, every year it's Bauer, now it's Clevinger this year, right? So what did you think of the Clevinger situation? And I actually liked the trade, but I thought the trade, and you kind of alluded to it, was more long-term, which is good. I have no problems there. But outside of Naylor, I mean, I like Quantrill, actually. I think Quantrill just needs more of time. But twofold, what did you think of the trade? And what did you think of that whole situation with Clevinger?
The trade, I'll start there because that's probably easier.
good call.
The trade, I think, like I said, it might take a few years to figure out if that was the move. It definitely didn't hurt their case that Clevinger ended up getting hurt and struggling to finish out the season. And so that ends up making their move look a little bit better. It's not like they could have projected that coming unless he was dealing with stuff that we didn't know about. But it was tough to know because you saw Naylor's offensive numbers, and that's what everyone wanted to be fixed now was the offense. And he wasn't going to be that guy. He ended up being that guy during the postseason, which ended up being a fun little twist. And that was enjoyable to watch. I think Quantrill could be interesting for them, especially if he does end up becoming a starter, because it just seems insane that they have 1,000 more starting options when they already have the best rotation in baseball, but sure, like just keep adding. I thought Hedges was weird. I thought that was a weird move when you have basically two of the same catchers because they're two of the best defensive catchers in the game, not much offense, and making about the same amount of money. So I don't know what they're going to do with that this offseason. I'll be intrigued to see if that means that Roberto Perez's option doesn't get picked up, which mm-hmm. would shock me because they really, really do love him. Mm-hmm. And beyond just what he can do with the glove, just how he can manage a staff, especially mm-hmm. a young staff. And moving forward, you know how young this pitching staff's about to be. Gosh. And he's just, people can't realize how valuable it is to have someone like Perez there whenever you have guys coming up like that. So I would be shocked by that. But then Hedges just seems so weird to tack onto that. So yeah. I don't know how that's going to play out. So the trade, I think, is okay. But for now, I think it'll just be we learn more as we go.
Of course.
The situation was rough. That was difficult. And Tito was in probably the prime of really bad health stuff right before he figured out what was going on wrong. And he had to force himself to come back to this team to address it because he's like, I did not think that they should be addressing this without me there. I thought yep. I should be there.
Knowing that information makes me even more angry. I was livid with the entire thing. I was livid.
Yep.
The fact that I don't do well with lying. And the fact that Clevinger would lie about the situation, how it went down and kind of sneak around, really just for me, whether he's good at baseball or not, whether he has a career that takes him to the Hall of Fame down the road, I don't even care because there's something about this where character matters. And you saw the connection between him and you saw the attitude trending the same way it did the year prior. With the move that needed to be made, and you just knew it wasn't going in a good place. I thought mm-hmm. better of Clevinger earlier, and it turned out that he just did. I'm sorry, his actions spoke louder than anything else, and it's very hard to forgive after something like that. I'm sure the team was not happy. So,
I mean, yeah, I think the team was very clear in how they felt. You could hear yeah. it in their comments. You could hear it in how seriously they took it. We talked to Shane Bieber before we found out about Clevinger, before whenever we thought it was just Plesac that went out. And that was handled okay. I mean, Plesac was caught and by what he said was MLB security on his Instagram video, which I'll get to in a second. He was caught and he was reported to the team and they handled it the way they should have. And I thought that was really well done. It gets difficult whenever you know that Clevinger was in the team meeting the next day when everyone was yeah. talking about how serious this was and he didn't speak up. It gets even more serious whenever you have mm-hmm. someone like Carlos Carrasco, who's in that clubhouse, who's high risk. And that gets yeah. even more serious because then yeah. he's now flying with Clevinger and Carrasco are flying together on the same plane. Mm-hmm. I mean, it got tough because Clevinger talked about his role as a leader this year because you didn't yes, have yeah. Trevor Bauer or Corey Kluber. You still have Carrasco there, obviously, as a veteran presence, but Clevinger was next. I mean, yep. there's not many guys with experience on this team. And so to have that as that person who's supposed to be stepping up into that leadership role was difficult. Not only did he mess up, but then he lied. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't understand because all the attention became on Clevinger at that point. Everyone was like, Clevinger messed up. And that allowed Plesac to sort of scoot by until he decided to post a video. That just
while he's driving,
12 driving, and not just one video. Wasn't it multiple? Didn't he have to keep recording or record a couple separate?
I can understand.
I'm gonna take the phone off of this kid, and I will say that his saving grace is that he's very young, as any 39-year-old father of two will say, he's young and dumb, young. Right? And that's where I can give him a little bit of forgiveness. He thought he was trying to own up to things. But boy, those words did not come out correct. There was a lot of deflecting there. He sounded not so smart in that in those series of videos. But again, he's someone that I think, you know, that influence of Clevinger making him think it was okay. There, you know, Clevinger, less talky-talky, more doey-doey, as I say, when we're going to talk about being a leader. And Clevinger just did not have that and lacked it. So
I actually want to lead off to that. Hipster Tito, boy, he's obviously on his stuff tonight. Because I was going to ask the same question. Who is the real leader of the Indians? We bantered. And no seatbelts. Yes, we know Hipster Tito. But we're going to pivot off that. Poor Mandy needs a different question. So there we go. Leadership. Because I think the face of this team, Shane Bieber. But if you ask me who the leader of this team is, you know, obviously it's Lindor while he's here. No question. I would say it's probably J-Ram somewhere too. after the game, the one thing I noticed, Mandy, is I saw Reyes and Naylor hanging out after the game and really taking in all the moments afterwards. I get the feeling that torch is being passed. Am I wrong? Is there something like, I think it's going more towards Reyes. I think it's going more in towards that direction. And I think Shane Bieber, who are the real leaders of the Indians going in 2021? If you had to answer that.
I think that was a problem for 2020. I think yes, that they didn't was. Have any.
Yep.
And they, and Tito's big thing is never appointing a leader. And I understand that because that puts unnecessary pressure on somebody who might not be ready to take it. Mm-hmm. But when you don't have the clear cut, like Michael Brantley type of guy that just steps into that seamlessly, you're sort mm-hmm. of without leadership, mm-hmm. especially on a really young team. So Lindor tried, and it was tough for us to get a vibe of who was trying to step in when we didn't right. see it in the clubhouse. But from the way everyone talked, it seemed like Lindor tried to take on most of that responsibility. But I think moving forward, it's going to be Shane Bieber for the pitchers, 1,000%. I know we say that Zach Plesac is young, but he's the same. He's older than Shane Bieber. And so, and they're
fair
both
point.
They're
fair
both
point.
Older than I am. So, and so
fair started, point, fair point, fair point, that's fair point.
But you look at someone like Shane Bieber and he's just, there's no words. He yeah. is as mature as it gets. He's as humble as it gets. He's as mm-hmm. down to earth as it gets. There's no better person that you're rooting to be a superstar than yep. that. And so it's just, and I think that he seamlessly will be that. He'll be that leader. For the bullpen, I think it was hard this year not to be Oliver Perez because yep. 18 seasons.
I love that guy. Bring him back. Bring him this salt and pepper beer. Sorry, bring him
you
back.
You beat me to
love
it,
him.
Damn it.
Love him. Love him. All right, I'm going to do a couple checkpoints. Here we go. I love Tristan McKenzie. Very, very excited. I want to bring everybody up to him. I'm very excited about him. Mandy knows this. Jared knows this. I love Karinchak. I know what he did in the playoffs with Bizarre, and he didn't play well. I do love Karinchak.
There's some growing up that needs.
There's
to
some growing
there.
Up to do. He yeah. bit his glove. He got. I just.
Yeah,
I felt
there
bad
were some for, certain nights where he looked a little.
I know. I felt bad for. I still love Karinchak. I'm getting my jersey. I love it, Mandy. I like Karinchak a lot. I'm excited about him. I'm excited. We talked about Naylor. Talk about McKenzie, Karinchak, some of these other young guys. You mentioned Daniel Johnson in the last 2 years with us. Yeah. Who are these younger guys who you see coming up or maybe who already are up that's like, keep your eye on? I just think those two guys in particular, McKenzie and Karinchak, really excite me. I like both a lot.
McKenzie for sure. I think he has sort of that calm, cool, collected yes. nature that Bieber has. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because like so many of their young pitchers have that. And it's like, they obviously are doing something like whether they just are looking for that trait in high school kids or college kids, wherever they're finding them in the draft, or they're able to sort of instill that in them in the minors. It's impressive because they come up and they don't act like the moment is too big ever. You can't say the same about the hitters because it seems like that they take some time and it seems like a lot of these moments can end up being too big. But the pitching is just unbelievable. The young pitchers yeah. can handle it. And so I think McKenzie's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. It was fun to watch him this year. It was fun to watch him adjust. And he's as real as it gets. So you ask him, like, well, what have you learned? I mean, you obviously are going to learn a lot. He said, the first thing I learned is that I have so much more to learn. And I already thought I had a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And so he's constantly trying to adapt and improve. And I think that's going to continue. And I think he's going to be everything they hoped for as long as he can stay healthy. I mean, his frame is tough for him to not get injuries. It's tough when you're tall and lanky like that. I mean, any type of little muscle thing can pop up. So as long as he's healthy, I think he could be fantastic. I think Karinchak has really the possibility of turning into their closer. And I think he could be a lockdown closer as long as he keeps working on that fastball command. When his fastball's working, I mean, he's really tough to hit. So I think he's exciting too. And I think the other young person that I'll throw on the radar now is I think it's finally time to be Nolan Jones. I mean, I think he'll come up at some point. I don't know if it'll be right away because of, you know, you got to look at their clocks and stuff. And I'm sure they're going to try to make sure that they get him up at the appropriate time. But I do think he'll be up in 2021 at some point. They're working with him now in the fall league to have a little bit more defensive versatility because they want Jose Ramirez at third. Okay. I know over the last few years they've questioned, could they move him? They seem very confident. Antonetti said he's established, and I think we're comfortable with him there. So, I mean, that's as straightforward as the Indians front office will get. So I think we all realize that they like him there. So I think they're trying to get Nolan Jones here quickly because why not? I think they might want to start him to get, because of this weird season where they just basically played against each other at Lake County. He'll have to get a few games under his belt, maybe in AAA and stuff, because he hasn't been there yet. But I don't think it'll take him long. They're trying him in the corner and outfield spots. They're trying him at first base. Move him around a little bit and get him adapted so that you can just get him up. And I think he'll be up. I think he'll be up at some point in 2021.
All right. So I'm going to do four guys. I forgot. Brad Hand. Is he coming back? Yes or no? Do you think?
No. I think they could pick up his option and then trade him if they think he has trade value.
Santana.
No.
Lindor.
No.
Wow. Everybody's gone. I told you folks, this might be happening. So, okay. So Mandy, so with all that being said, is it officially time to say maybe the Indians are, with a Cy Young award winner and possible MVP, transitioning into somewhat of a rebuild? Is that fair?
Seems like they continue to do it. They're towing a line where they don't fully enter a rebuild. It's like they're partially, but they're trying to make sure. But it's hard. I mean, it's hard to actually enter a rebuild when you have the best rotation in baseball. I don't know how you can ever enter that, because if you have pitching, you're always in the games. And part of the pitching is 23, 24-year-olds who are lights out. And so when you have that, I mean, that's, my goodness, that is...
On nights where you can score two or three runs, like that's, and if that's what your rotation's giving you, that's automatically keep you in it. Mandy, that's something that, you know, I think could make Indians fans happy, at least that through this time and the development of these young guys that are going to have to come up, going to have to step in, going to have to start playing position on a daily basis. No more platooning in the outfield all season, that it might be, you know, baseball worth watching still, especially because of the pitching.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the biggest thing was this year, as long as they scored three runs, they basically won. It was almost locked up. I'm trying to remember. I think it was, what was it? They're 29 and they were 29-6 in games that they scored at least three, which I mean, that's insane.
I brought that set up earlier.
They were great. We've almost kept your 45 minutes, Mandy, which is a long time, but I have one more question. Okay. One more. If you could wrap up in a bow 2020 Indians, what would it be? Well, you can have a sentence or a paragraph or a few words. I know. Tough question.
I think it all comes down to Shane Bieber. I mean, I guess if the only thing that you remember about 2020 is going to be Shane Bieber. But I think it's just tough because the offense just took so much attention because it was so bad at times. And so, I think it's just 2020 was elite pitching with very inconsistent bats. So, but I mean, if we're narrowing it down to one thing, it's hard to not pin Shane Bieber's name to this season because he was everything.
Electric stuff.
Two more things to get into. One, when I get my new Indians tattoo to replace the old one, what is it going to be?
Oh, good question. Thank you. Yes.
Oh man. I know.
Spiders?
I know a lot of people are rooting for the Spiders. I know that that's going to be...
I like the Spiders. I think the Buckeyes would be fun, too.
The Guardians started to grow on me.
Guardians are okay.
I've heard the Guardians from a lot of people that are rooting for that. I mean, I think...
Is the front office working with the Native American communities or different tribes throughout the region? Is that going to have any effect on possibly keeping some sort of Native American heritage team name by chance?
I wondered that because I know they want to make sure that those groups are included in this process because they're the ones who are directly impacted by it.
Right.
So
that's right.
They want to make sure that the group who is most associated with this has as much of a voice in it as possible. So they are planning to do that. I know they already had started that process and I'm sure it's going to go all off season. And continue that. I don't know if they'll be able to come up with something that would come up with tie it together. I know some people were maybe even guessing that they just leave it as tribe. Maybe
I thought they could, that one too, actually.
Like, cause, I mean, that's already been something that everyone has already referred to them as. But when you think of something as big as changing the entire franchise name, like that's not something that you can just come up with overnight. So I'm sure there's just hundreds of voices having to be weighed.
Oh, could you imagine that nightmare?
There's a team in Washington that already gave up on it. So
I know, exactly. I mean,
they just said, forget it. We're not even going to bother. We don't care. We're just going to call
Cleveland baseball team and we're done. Like, let's just call it a day.
On one final serious note, how's Tito and how are things going to play out with him in the future? Because we talk about him on a regular basis on the show. We care about his health. We want him to be okay. Mm-hmm. We know that COVID it scared the hell out of me regarding his health and being around the team, especially when some of the things went down that did. But where is Tito now? If you can speak to that, and how do you think he comes back next season?
You know, it was nice to have a Zoom call with him after the season ended to see him and know firsthand what he looked like, because we saw what he looked like when he came back that week during the Clevenger and Plesac mess. And he wasn't himself. You could tell he was uncomfortable. You could tell that he was off. And he was himself again. And that was really reassuring, because to take Tito out of baseball takes a lot. And you knew it had to be serious for him to be away from the team as long as he was. And they kept it very under wraps. We didn't know the extent of it until he released it himself. And I think that's good. I think that's good that he handled that on his own without having to take any analyzation from anybody. And he just went and had all of his blood clotting stuff and everything that he had to go to the ICU for 4 days. I mean, it was a rough stretch for him. But he seemed to be in a lot better shape. When we talked to him in mid-October, it was about a week after he left Cleveland, or 2 weeks after he left Cleveland. He left right after the postseason ended. His doctors cleared him to go to Arizona, back to where he lives, in the off season, and they felt confident in him leaving. He's going to take some physical therapy to try to build himself back up again. And he was really in a good spot. He was typical Tito, laughing and joking and making fun of his health as always. And that was just great to see and hear. And he seems ready to come back. I think the biggest thing is that he feels guilty, which he shouldn't, because he should not ever feel guilty for taking care of that. And you know, everyone in the Cleveland organization is making sure he doesn't. Yeah. But that's just who he is. And he feels guilty that he was not able to be there for his team this season. And I think that's the biggest driving force for him to get better and to be in a better state to be back next season. And he seemed very confident that he'd be back. Brad Mills, they're not as confident. He said that Mills was going to go out and fly out with and stay with him in Arizona for a little bit, so they could just have a week or two to just chill and talk about it, relaxed setting, and see, because of his family situation with his grandson passing away in spring training and everything. So
that's awesome. I wanted to ask how he was doing too, actually.
I think they're working through that. I don't know what that decision's going to end up being, because that was tough on his family.
Oh no.
And so I think that one's going to be a bigger decision, but it would shock me if Tito is not back and ready to go, no matter how many more surgeries he needs. Cause he said, I think I was up to like 11 surgeries before I even got into August. So I was like, the past year. So it takes a lot to knock that man down. So I think he'll be back and he'll be ready to have his little revenge on 2021 after a rough year of 2020.
Yes. Hey, switching gears real quick to Facebook. We got to throw some love Mandy's way. Yeah. Shannon Mayer. Mandy Bell is the best beat reporter in the land. So
thanks, Shannon.
Shannon with the most sound. Mandy, thank you. Again, I will repeat, everybody should follow Mandy, of course. Mandy Bell. What's your handle? Mandy Bell.
02.
Mandy Bell 02. And Sarah Lang,
there's great. Mandy Bell 1.
Well, everybody out there is Mandy Bell 1. If you want to put it up for sale, obviously someone who's a Penn State grad might be a little anxious to get that back. And Sarah Lang is a great follow as well. Mandy, thank you. Wonderful reporting as always, and we hope to see you next time, you know, whenever that is. Hopefully when we're talking about Lindor staying, maybe we make a big trade for someone and, you know, big things, or maybe the new Indians. But either case would be fine.
Don't forget, Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Cleveland and Beyond, on Twitter at CLE and Beyond. Shoot us an email, andyandjared@gmail.com, J-A-R-I-D is how you spell that. Check out the website, clevelandandbeyond.net. We are part of Waiting for Next Year. Check them out. Original Cleveland Sports Reporting at waitingfornextyear.com, and also soon to announce with Evergreen Podcast. Mandy, as always, a pleasure. Love having you on. And thanks for helping us put a bow on this season with the Cleveland Indians. Thank God they were able to pull it off in the end safely. And we are looking forward to talking to you more next season and before the season starts to get an update on 2021. Thank you so much.
Have a good night, Mandy.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. You know, that right there, I think she said it best, where it's like, you know, you can feel the transition coming, Jared. You can feel things that are going on in the clubhouse. You can feel all the things we were talking about, and Mandy always does a great job, but you could tell it's hard putting into words what it was, because Shane Bieber's electric. How could you not get excited about Josh Naylor and McKenzie and Reyes? How could you not? But at the same time, you can feel the rebuild. You hate saying it, but you can feel the rebuild. You can feel it. It's not a big rebuild, but it's a rebuild.
I am surprisingly happier coming out of that interview than I was going in.
That's good.
Mandy gave me the warm and fuzzies by reminding me that this team has the best pitching staff, the best rotation in baseball. Tito will be coming back, and there is a lot of young talent that will have time to develop. And again, she reminded us, three runs will get them a win. So
no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Now look, there's a lot to decipher. Everybody can go back and listen to the Yankees thoughts. But here's what I will say about this. In fact, those Yankee thoughts, someone should do a film on that. Oh, all right. Someone is. But anyways, getting a little plug in there. Get a little plug. A little plug. All that to be said, I thought, though, this season was so complicated because we forget in all this long, in all this long, a long season, you have the whole incident with Clevinger. And then you had the whole stuff too with Plesac. And I agree with Hipster Tito. It is happening. It's okay. I'm with Tito.
Yep.
I love the Reyes, Beebs, and Tristan experience. I'm ready. I will throw in there Karinchak. I know so many people aren't. I do. I'm excited about him. And I really, really do want to see Allen. I'm ready to see Bobby Bradley playing. I'm ready to see Daniel Johnson playing. I'm ready to see these things happening.
Yeah, so am I. So
I'm ready to start that.
Let's get ready. Hey, one more for us, Andy. EJ says Clark on Facebook. Clark is pointing, saying hi, hi, hi. So hi from Clark. Thanks, EJ. Clark is EJ's young son watching us there on Facebook.
Oh, my gosh. That is so adorable. We had a lot of comments tonight. Again, thank you very much, everybody, joining in and out. And this is what we thought was to be a good time. Again, for people who are listening, this will be during the Browns bye week. For people who are watching us live, obviously, we're live. But all that to be said, we want to put a bonus season because I do. I know Jared is too. We love the Browns. We are diehard. I watch every game. Jared does too. We watch and listen to every game. And this year was a lot of fun. And I know it's hard to remember that because of that crap that happened in the playoffs. All that to be said, though, it was a fun year during a very complicated year. And I do agree. Again, Hipster Tito said, and I feel the same way. It's exciting to see Reyes. Bieber's obviously exciting. And again, this could be a year with everything that might be forgettable, where they might win the MVP and definitely Cy Young, but maybe both. It's amazing, Jared. It's amazing. And a year that you almost forget it happened because it's been a month ago, but it's been a special, special year for awards. Big questions, by the way, going into offseason. Big, big, big questions.
He's Andy Billman.
I am. Yes,
I am. I'm Jared Watson.
Someone's bedtime's coming up, so we got to go.
Call him the Tribe, maybe.
I still like Tribe. These names. I like the Tribes fine. Clevelanders. I know no one likes that name. I like the Clevelanders.
Weird.
Spiders is cool.
Nope.
Guardians is cool.
Yep.
I'm all that Buckeyes. Love it. I would do any of those. And check. All those names are cool. All those names are cool with me. I just want to see a full season with everybody healthy playing around. And I really would love to. I'm fascinated. Okay, real quickly for you and I, would you keep Carlos Santana?
It's time.
I think it's time. Brad Hand.
No.
I think I would say goodbye. It's tough. Perez. This is a toughie.
I don't think I want to get rid of Perez.
I think I want to keep him. God, you and I are so like.
Can we transition him into like a player coach?
But I think Sandy Leon, we need to say leaving on to somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah.
I like Hedges and Perez, but I don't want to see Leon, Hedges, Perez. None of that. I agree. Everybody seems to be on our board. I think you keep Perez too. I love Perez. Feels like he's part of this. He's had some big moments. People forget 16. He had a couple big home runs. Should I keep talking? I love talk. I drank a lot.
I mean, if you want to turn this into four episodes in one, sure. But
I mean, hey, I know it's the bye week.
I'm trying to put a clean bow on this.
I keep mucking it up. But anyways, thank
He's
you,
Andy. Still Andy Billman.
I am still Andy Billman.
I'm still Jared Watson.
I might just keep doing a fucking show. I got lots of
fun. Andy's going to log on by himself. I'm going to go to bed.
No, I got work to do. So.
Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Cleveland and Beyond with Andy and Jared is a part of Evergreen Podcast. You can follow them on Facebook at facebook.com/Cleveland and Beyond, on Twitter at CLENBeyond, or shoot them an email at andyandjared@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit the website, clevelandandbeyond.net.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.